Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, probably crazy and crazy martinis. You could call them good, bad, and crazy as we get to them today. Obviously, a big election day today, Jim, primary day in Indiana. If you're conservative, you know what to do. We've been telling you for a long time. We don't need to dwell on it, but hopefully you'll do your job today. Let's move on to the good martini, and we go to Hillary Clinton facing the music for a very ill-advised quote she made at a town hall in Ohio a few weeks back. For those who don't remember, because it was a Hillary Clinton town hall on CNN, here's what she had to say about the coal industry not that long ago.
I'm the only candidate which has a policy about how to bring economic opportunity using clean, renewable energy as the key into coal country. Because we're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business. Right, Tim? And we're going to make it clear that we don't want to forget those people.
And we'll talk about that in just a moment, because Bo Copley is a employee, a foreman in the coal industry. And now the coal states are coming up on the Democratic primary schedule. So he confronted her very politely at a meeting around the table with Kentucky and West Virginia about to vote for the Democrats. Here was his statement, and here was her pathetic response.
I just want to know how you can say you're going to put a lot of coal miners out of jobs and then come in here and tell us how you're going to be our friend, because those people out there don't see you as a friend.
I know that, Bo. And, you know, I don't know how to explain it other than what I said was totally out of context from what I meant, because I have been talking about helping coal country for a very long time. And I did put out a plan last summer. And it was a misstatement, because what I was saying is that the way things are going now, we will continue to lose jobs. That's what I meant to say, and I think that that seems to be supported by the facts.
Bo, good job. Hillary Clinton, nice job with the soft tone, but you're toast here.
You know, Bo, when I said we've got to move away from coal and all the other fossil fuels, I didn't mean it in a cheerful way. I meant move away in a sad way. The Hillary pitch is, I'm going to take away the job you have, but I'm going to get you a better one in solar panels or wind energy or something like that. And you're going to be better off in the long run. So, and you're probably going to lose your job in the coal mining industry anyway. Eventually, I'm just accelerating the process. Not surprisingly, a lot of coal miners and people who depend on the coal industry don't like that. That doesn't sound very plausible to them. That doesn't sound like a great plan for them. You can't expect to say, my policy will be to cause upheaval in your industry and ultimately the eradication of your industry, but I still want you to support me. You cannot attack people's livelihood and say, but I've got these other ideas that have come through. You know, this is maybe a sign that Hillary should not take Trump quite as lightly as maybe a lot of Democrats are, in that if you are so spectacularly out of touch that you think, no, I'm going to take away the job you have, but a government program is going to set you up better. And you don't understand why Americans are cynical about that or doubtful about that, or why they are not inclined to believe your promises. When your name is Hillary Clinton, she really does come across as being out of touch. And you know, you and I have articulated our criticisms of Donald Trump for a very long time. This is not a candidate at the top of her game. If she makes enough mistakes, you know, Trump will take opportunities like this. So it's a good martini for the right. It's a good art martini for illustrating that, you know, look, ultimately the Democrats hate the coal industry and want to see it destroyed. And they occasionally let the mask slip, and we'll say this openly. Unsurprisingly, this is not going to sell very well in West Virginia. But then again, I don't think she was expecting to win West Virginia in the general election either.
Yeah, I don't think Kentucky, West Virginia are on the plan for her electoral map. But Jim, I've got some good news. I've got some good news for Bo Copley and his friends. Here's what Hillary Clinton said later in her answer.
Obviously, if I'm fortunate enough to be president, I'm going to be as focused to help West Virginia as I can. Whether or not people in West Virginia support me, I'm going to support you.
Just like the young people, you might not support me, but I'm for you, darn it.
You can't chase me away. I'm just going to keep on loving you.
That's right. She's totally going to be camping out in West Virginia if she's president. You know that's right at the very, very top of her agenda. All right. If that wasn't crazy enough, let's move to a genuinely crazy martini. Donald Trump, if he can win in Indiana today, is most likely on a path to eventually getting the 1237 before Cleveland, and everyone's dream of a contested convention will possibly crumble into dust. So, of course, the presumptive, or perhaps soon to be presumptive, Republican nominee is now pivoting to more mature topics and striking a tone that's going to be perhaps received better by a larger percentage of the population. No. He was on Fox and Friends today, and instead of talking about the critical issues related to the American people, he's busy linking Ted Cruz's father to the Kennedy assassination.
His father was with Lee Harvey Oswald prior to Oswald's being, shot. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. What is this, right prior to his being shot? And nobody even brings it up. I mean, they don't even talk about that. That was reported, and nobody talks about it. But I think it's horrible.
Right. There was a picture out there that reportedly shows Rafael Cruz standing with Lee Harvey Oswald.
I mean, was he doing with Lee Harvey Oswald shortly before the death, before the shooting? It's
crazy.
Horrible.
Reported by the National Enquirer and the National Enquirer only, but even if the picture is accurate, clearly Ted Cruz's father was an integral plotter in the assassination of President Kennedy, Jim.
Yeah, I hope everyone knows you're making air quotes as you say reported. There's a photo, an old photo of Lee Harvey Oswald distributing pamphlets, and he's speaking to a group of people, and there's a guy in a white shirt who has never been identified by historians or the investigation or the Warren Commission or anybody like that. And the Inquirer's theory is, Ted Cruz's father is that man. Now, first of all, Greg, aren't you loving the new presidential, mature, button-down Trump we're getting?
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is way different. Heck of a job, Paul Manafort. Heck of a job. And then the second thought there is, you're Donald Trump, and the polling indicates that Indiana is going to go pretty well for you tonight, right? And if Indiana goes well, California is looking really good, you're likely going to get the 1,237 delegates you want. But most nominees want a united party. Now, apparently Trump has said in the last couple of days he doesn't think he needs the Never Trump Republicans. So if and when he loses, Trump fans, don't come back and blame us. Your man himself said he didn't need us. But traditionally, a candidate wants to unify the party behind him. And this is exactly the moment where he would want Ted Cruz to not feel so bad about him. We'll see how this shakes out, Greg. But if Ted Cruz endorses the guy who sent out the tweet saying his wife was ugly and accused his dad of having a role in killing JFK, then Ted Cruz is the biggest wimp of all time. What would Donald Trump have to do for you to start saying, no, Donald Trump, I will not endorse you. You've made too many scurrilous, baseless lies about my family. Go to heck. Go other places. I'm not backing you. I am never Trump. Like, what's it going to take? It's going to be really depressing to see not just Republicans falling in line behind a guy who you and I would argue is really not much of a conservative at all, but who, seeing like the Jeb Bushes of the world, little Marco Rubio, right? All of these Republicans who Trump has insulted to their faces, insulted their family, they're going to line up behind him. It's just enormously dispiriting. And also the idea that Donald Trump doesn't have the impulse control to not lash out in a baseless conspiracy theory. I mean, now all of a sudden, the idea of Director of National Intelligence Alex Jones doesn't seem so unthinkable, Greg. This is where we're headed. So again, it's an indicator that there is going to be no change in the tone of the Trump campaign. He is going to continue to make the most outrageous accusations. We should expect Hillary and space aliens and stuff like that in the general election. And it appears that, barring some surprise tonight, Indiana voters are going to validate this. So this is a hemlock martini, Greg.
Jim, this was the button-down Trump. The non-button-down Trump would have had Rafael Cruz on the grassy knoll, I'm pretty sure.
Lion shooting Ted pulled the trigger.
Lee
Harvey Oswald.
Ted wasn't born yet, but he's still somehow responsible.
The time travel went back in time. For the lizard people. I am going to build a wall to keep the lizard people out.
Oh, I wish we could say we were moving on to something less crazy, but we're not. Here's our third martini for the day. This is from a guy named Justin Kermy, writing over at the Huffington Post in the HuffPost politics section. The title of the piece is A Revision on the Bill of Rights, Part 3. Heaven help us what the first two parts are, but here's what he writes about the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is highly contested. There's no doubt that people do have the right to carry and have a stockpile of guns, and a state has the right to organize a well-regulated militia. But the main issue is on the right to self-defend with a firearm. This is the worst or the best part, depending on your perspective. The main problem with the notion of self-defense is it imposes on justice, for everyone has the right for a fair trial. Therefore, using a firearm to defend oneself is not legal, because if the attacker is killed, he or she is devoid of his or her rights. Jim, apparently if they kill us, our rights aren't compromised, but we got to get these ravenous murders to a trial and make sure they're not bleeding on our sidewalk somewhere.
So I'm going to simplify this guy's argument and try not to sound like Spicoli when I say it. So, Greg, if somebody attacks me, how do I know they're guilty of attacking me?
Oh,
I would look at that and say, well, because they're attacking you. That would be my first clue. That would be the idea is the victim using it for self-defense. Like, it's not like somebody's going to come up and, I was trying to swat a bee. That's why I hit you in the head. Like, the idea, as if we have this problem of lots of people killing people who are completely not attacking them by accident. Like, oh, he sneezed. I'm sorry. I thought he was coming towards me. That's why I, you know. That's why I shot him. I was just being a precaution. The idea that this is some sort of national issue, we need to completely change the Constitution. He said, rewrite the Bill of Rights, right? We revise the Bill of Rights. And the idea that the victims of potential violence or those who are being attacked will mistake their attacker for somebody who's not attacking them, even though they're being attacked at the moment. It's painful logic there. What kind of jumps out at me, Greg, is like, you spent a long time in radio journalism. Do you remember, like, editors would, like, look at this and say, like, go home.
Right.
Get out of my office. I don't want to see you. This is ridiculous. This is terrible. I'm not saying, like, a piece like this should be a firing offense. I'm just saying, like, you'd get your editor yelling at you for making, you know, for bad logic like that. And clearly there's none of that at the Huffington Post anymore, where you can say, you know, how do we know muggers are actually mugging people? Well, one, that's why they call them muggers. But two, like, the victim is, you know, probably, I kind of think the victim right then and there is going to know whether or not they're being attacked. They're generally not hallucinating muggings and things like that. So there we are, Greg. I'm trying to think whether who's going to do more damage to the Constitution, this guy or Donald Trump. And I got to say, you know, Donald Trump's isn't looking so bad. You know, way to go, Huffington Post writer. You've got me feeling a little more sympathetic towards Trump.
Oh, man. The lack of logic doesn't end there. He goes on to say, therefore, if we ponder and meditate on the recent events and news about guns, it would be obvious that the current state is incorrect. A gun for civilians is a weapon for a revolution and not for ordinary use. The belief that a gun is a useful tool to protect one is counterintuitive, because guns get into the hands of people who use them for horrible reasons, Jim. So if anybody can ever use anything for a bad reason, they shouldn't be allowed to exist.
It's a good thing law enforcement guns never end up in the wrong hands, Greg, because if it did, I'd be furious so fast, you know. Let me just observe there, Greg, that, you know, when he says, you know, with this, it's not just for self-protection. This is a tool for a revolution or rebelling against the government. As the software engineers say, Greg, that's not a bug. That's a feature.
That's right.
Let me know when you get to the problem part. So, yeah, there you go.
Well, from hemlock to at least a little bit of frivolity as we go out with the insanity of the Huffington Post. Thanks for at least giving us a crazy laugh today. I'm sure we'll either be ridiculously happy and surprised tomorrow or brooding deeply. Jim, we'll figure it out tomorrow. Talk to you then.
I'm ready to brood, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.